Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:31 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is June 13th, and 2-year gilts or 2-year government bonds in the UK broke out today by 26 basis points. That's a new recovery high, and I haven't seen rates at this level since 2008. So inflation is clearly not yet under control. Now, there are predictions that perhaps the peak in the interest rate cycle will be somewhere around 6%. That would take us all the way back to the peak from 2007. But it does raise some important questions. There are obviously challenges for the UK economy, and some of those have to do with the fact that it's an island economy, and therefore inflation is generally harder to get in under control because supply chains are that bit more stretched. Some of it has to do with the fact that there has been a marked move against immigration, so there are fewer workers. But then there are also the issues with ill health and a large percentage of the population deciding that they don't want to work anymore. And one has to obviously draw a line there in correlation between that and the exceptionally high tax rate and the low point at which it kicks in. So you have a productivity challenge, you have a labor challenge, you have a healthcare challenge, and that's all compounding and driving yields higher. So that's not such great news for the stock market. And with yields continuing to push higher, we should be then anticipating that more UK focused stocks are not going to perform as admirably as one might hope, but rather that the higher yield that's available for the UK is perhaps not quite yet adequately compensating an investor for the risk of taking on stock market risk versus what's available in the bond markets. Might suggest that yields might have to rise somewhat further. Now, of course, then on a relative value basis, international investors are not just going to be comparing the valuations between various different stock markets, but they'll also be looking at what the potential is for the return from bond markets, and then currencies will play a big part in that. And the pound was up a cent in here today. It's pushing back up towards the upper side of this range. This continues to look like a clear recovery path, which is obviously also very much tied to the trajectory for interest rates. And of course, none of this is good news for anyone who is going to be refixing their mortgage. And there is a big slug of, or I think the It's July and August is where there is a big number of mortgages need to be refinanced. So this isn't exactly the best of timing. Now, when we then think about what's happening in China, then it's pretty obvious that they're going to have to start stimulating eventually. The CSI 300 was up about a half a percent today, certainly not in a dynamic manner. And there's increasing talk about the need for stimulus, and they could get discussed at a central government level as early as the end of this week. But there is no date yet set for when actually they're going to start injecting liquidity into the system. And I think it is rather interesting to think about exactly what is happening because it's very much a catch-22 situation. Chinese property prices, real estate, and infrastructure have surged over the last 40 years, and the valuation is difficult to justify when you have loan-to-income ratios that are anywhere from about 25 to 45 times, depending on the city. Then that's an extraordinary number to begin with. But the only way that it could be justified is when you have economic growth of 10%, when that is lifting hundreds of millions of people out of poverty into the middle classes, and then there will be a trickle-down effect, and lots of people will have higher savings they can deploy into the property market. Well, then What happens is that the property market starts turning into a proxy for that economic development and improvement in human capital. But of course, what happens when your growth rate falls from 10% to 5%, which is exactly what's happened in China over the last 3 or 4 years, and they've been managing down the growth expectations while at the same time property prices have continued to rise? Well, then that just makes the property even more expensive based upon that way of thinking about valuations. So then you have the additional point that the local governments, they need land sales. There isn't a property tax. They need to raise funds somewhere. There's been historically a or a tripartite relationship between the property developers, the banks, and the local governments, and everyone scratches everyone else's back. And it was a great engine for growth and money, and as long as leverage was increasing. And now, without the potential or without the clear evidence of liquidity being injected, then you could really have a property crash. And of course, the central government doesn't want that either, but they don't want the bubble to inflate. So they're caught between a rock and a hard place. And the only way out of that is to be measured. But this does bring us to a very important question, because there are some key levers of liquidity in the global markets. And China's willingness to support its property market by any means necessary was one of the big levers. And by throwing vast sums of cash at the domestic economy, they basically rescued the entire global economy in the aftermath of the global financial crisis. But of course, it also fueled a property bubble. So if they're not willing to do that any longer, and the credit impulse is not it's no longer trending higher. In fact, it really hasn't gone anywhere for most of the last 6 months. It's hovering here basically around the zero bound. And now we can look at this chart over the course of the last 15 years. There was that massive infusion of liquidity in 2009. Then it was taken out, or at least the growth rate ebbed off, which is not quite the same thing as taking it out. But then it surged again in 2012 and 13, 2015 and 16, 2019 and 20. And now it has bounced in 2022 and subsequently not gone anywhere. So the potential is that they will inject new liquidity into the market in an order, an effort at least, to rescue the domestic economy. But they don't want to fuel the bubble, which means that the volume will be measured. What I found especially interesting today was that even though the stock market was in positive territory, it was led higher by the semiconductor stocks. And the state-owned banks were, in fact, not really firing. So we're not seeing a lot of enthusiasm for the banking sector. And if there were going to be a swathe of new liquidity poured into the market, you'd anticipate that banks should perform in that environment. Now let's think about the other levers of potential leverage. So Japan remains wedded to the yield curve control, and the yen continues to depreciate. So that is one source of liquidity that is still firing, with the yen trending downwards, trending down against the US dollar, and then pretty much breaking out today versus the yen, or the euro breaking out against it. So this is a clear break now above the 150 level. And then, because of all this interest in semiconductors, the Korean won has been really quite strong, and it is also breaking out against the yen. So Japan, by single-handedly, or I guess perhaps not that that's not the right term, but Japan is certainly alone in refusing to withdraw liquidity, and it is clearly devaluing the currency. It's obviously also aimed at improving the competitiveness of the Japanese economy, because with the yen going down like this, then Japanese exporters are going to be much more attractively priced. So that is also helping to fuel the nominal price appreciation of the Nikkei. And it was up nearly 600 points in here today. So this is a very clear breakout. And it is now running up towards this psychological 35,000 level. And if this trend is going to remain reasonably consistent, then it will probably pause somewhere around the 35,000 level. But of course, there is also the potential that with the yen depreciating, that it might go further than that. So the first clear downward dynamic would be required to question the potential for additional upside here. So when we think about liquidity and capital being global and mobile, then the chances are that the liquidity being provided in Japan is certainly one of the levers that is helping to fuel speculative interest. Now, we have the inflation rate in the USA. So CPI came down a little. But then you also had the month-over-month figures going up. So inflation is not yet under control. 10-year yields were up 8 basis points in here today. So this continues to firm here. And I think then we're going to start to hear more about interest expense. And this is the most recent one of these I've seen. But we definitely have seen that the cost of servicing the US government's interest rates, the, excuse me, I'm just silencing my phone. We've definitely seen that the cost of servicing the debt has rallied from 400 billion to almost 600 billion in the space of only 2 years. So that's a big chunk of change. And it's double the education budget. So when we think about what that means, the Federal Reserve in the USA is no longer sending money back to the Treasury because they're not making a profit. And the cost of servicing the debt has gone up in a big way. It's gone up by 50%. And then tax receipts are going down. So if inflation isn't got under control soon, it's going to cause a significant challenge for the US government. And that's something that could put downward pressure on the dollar. So the dollar index is rolling over now, and it is encountering resistance in the region of that 200-day moving average. Now, I think I do believe that the longer term trend is something that we definitely need to keep in the back of our minds, that there is almost a biblical cyclicality to the dollar, and it tends to have 7-year bull markets followed by 7-year bad markets or bear markets. So we've had this one going on for 8 years, and now it's overdue a generational long or 7-year decline, which, if the long-term pattern holds true, then it is going to necessitate that the dollar will depreciate in a manner that would take it down to a new low on the dollar index, which would be a decline in the order of about 30%. So that would be a really phenomenally large devaluation of the dollar. We're not yet at a point where the Federal Reserve is cutting rates and making more liquidity available. There is certainly speculation that they're going to pause in the interest rate hiking cycle this week, and then there's the potential they may have to raise rates further. The problems, of course, are that the government is starting to have issues with raising the funds required to pay the debt. The economy is starting to slow down. Unemployment or jobless figures have broken on the upside. So Every kind of indicator for a recession is firing, except that the stock market is still firm. And the Nasdaq was breaking out to new recovery highs yesterday and improved upon that performance in here today. And now it's back testing the 15,000 point level. Now, that's still well shy of the peak that we saw at the end of 2021, but certainly this trend of performance is still intact. And what I thought was particularly interesting today is the speculative interest in the market, that Tesla continues to push on the upside. And I think there is at least some reason for that they're in a position that they can cut the price on their cars, and they're engaging in a lot of price competition. And I was just looking at the historic price of the Model Y, and a year ago, I was looking at buying a new car, and we were looking at a Model Y, and they cost something like $65,000. Well, today it's more like $39,900. So they've cut the price by $25,000. And that's rather extraordinary. And Ford is attempting to go head to head with them. So far at least, Tesla is coming out the winner in that. Now, I think it's a very open question whether companies like Rivian are in a position to perform or to compete in that kind of price war. But that didn't stop the share from rising in here today. So we have 10-year yields that are moving on the upside. And it does then beg the question, what's likely in terms of the yield curve spread? And that is still contracting down to negative 85 basis points. So what that really tells us is that the 2-year yield was up more than the 10-year. And 2-year yields are pushing up now back to the peak that we saw at the beginning of this year. And that is more like pricing in that we're not yet at the peak of of interest rate hiking, that there could yet be more. Now, when we think about what all this means for gold, well, in a weak dollar environment, that should generally be a benign environment for gold, but the price was negative today, but negative in US dollar terms. So it's pricing in the potential that there will be more interest rate hikes, even if they pause in on Wednesday. Now, let's also then just look at how gold is performing versus a weaker currency like the yen. And even here, it was in negative territory and has been pretty much range bound for the last 6 weeks. But this is weakening from a very high level. And oil prices, having been weak yesterday, well, they bounced in here today. So we continue to see this range that's been going on between $70 and $80 still holding. Now, this is a very finely balanced market, and when it breaks out, it's going to be an emphatic move. Ranges are explosions waiting to happen. So when it breaks out, I anticipate that we're going to see at least a $10 or $20 move in a very short period of time. I'm increasingly seeing people talking about the fact that Permian supply has peaked, and that's obviously problematic from a global supply perspective, and it could deliver greater control of the market to OPEC, which would then push prices higher over the medium term. And of course, this is happening at pretty much the exact same time that the global economy is contracting. So we have China, where they're talking about adding liquidity but are constrained from how much they can add. We have Japan, which has never stopped adding liquidity. We have the USA, which is still in a tightening environment, but with the threat of a recession, that's not that far away that we're going to see greater supply of liquidity provided. Now, the bet, of course, then with stocks is that liquidity is where the name of the game is, and that earnings are secondary, and that in the event that we get an economic recovery, then earnings will bounce back quickly. But this is very similar to what we saw during the pandemic, what we saw in 2021, that investors were willing to look past or look over the chasm of an earnings decline to the recovery and were therefore not willing to sell. And then that became problematic for anyone who was holding the cloud computing stocks, and they really collapsed in 2022. Then we have AI, and there's enormous enthusiasm around the outlook for the sector. And Oracle has surged higher over the last 6 weeks and then broke or gapped higher yesterday and then has given up a good part of that move. There's something that I think is rather interesting, and I've seen this discussed in several places recently. It's when you think about the average weekly consumption of corrugated boxes, which would be basically cardboard boxes. And it is breaking downwards. So the thing that I thought was most particularly interesting is that consumption of cardboard boxes was actually much higher prior to the global financial crisis, collapsed, and then took about a decade to recover back to the pre-GFC levels. But there's no doubting that it is now trending downwards. Now, one would assume that that is really not great news for a company like Amazon. They don't have very high margins, and they have been trying to boost those margins with advertising. And the share has rebounded really quite impressively, and that is clearly pricing in demand for cloud computing. But if their core business is going to sustain some damage, then obviously that isn't great news for the stock. Now, let's then just compare that with the performance of eBay. So, this would be a pure e-commerce business. It collapsed in 2022 and really hasn't recovered. Then, let's just then think about one of the conspicuous consumption type companies. Lululemon has been ranging for most of the last year, and then it had that big pop on the upside following earnings 3 weeks ago and hasn't really gone much of anywhere, but was in positive territory today, and it is bouncing from the region of the 200-day moving average. And then you also still have companies like Zoom that are not doing anything, and there's obviously a risk that there's going to be a denouement eventually where they just run out of money and companies like this could go bust. So we're definitely in an interesting environment where investors want to look beyond the problem to the solution without having to go through the valley of disappointment in between. And if interest rates continue to move higher, then the valuations that we have on Wall Street in particular are going to increasingly look problematic. The fact that gold remains in this consolidation, it suggests that there is some money getting taken off the table. And it's also on the assumption that inflation is not so much of a problem. I have been of the view for quite some time already that it's much more likely that we're going to have a deflationary shock than an inflationary shock. And the reason for that is quantitative tightening. Quantitative easing creates inflationary expectations. Quantitative tightening, literally sucking money out of the global economy, contributes to deflationary forces. And when we look at the total assets of central banks redenominated into US dollars, well, it hasn't been It hasn't been collapsing lower, but it's not moving higher either. And I think when we think about what that means, it really does look like it's more likely to break downwards than upwards. So we're certainly seeing liquidity getting taken out of the market, even as the technology sector remains very well bid. And to me, at least, that the only way to rationalize that is that what we're looking at a bubble. And the first signs of trouble in the overvalued portion of the market are going to be, I think, signals that really do need to be heeded. And I think when we think then about the advanced decline lines for the NYSE, it's been hovering in the region of the 200-day moving average for all of this year. It bounced from the region of the 1,000-day at the end of last year. And the direction in which this breaks is going to give us a lot of, I think, intelligence about which way markets are more likely to move in. And it has been somewhat steadier over the course of the last few weeks, and it is back above the 200-day moving average. But I am monitoring this quite closely. I just don't see that we can have a return to a big bull market environment when interest rates are this high and when inflation has not yet been got under control. And I think with that, I'll leave it for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.